All right. Hello, everyone. It just occurred to me that maybe I should plug in. When I was listening to Kate, the mic was a little in and out. And just now I was listening to Ken, the mic was a little in and out. I did reboot at the end of Kate, near the end of Kate's teaching, but I'm wondering if I'm going to be a little in and out for you guys. So what I think I will do is go ahead and put on a song like I always do. Typically I sit here quietly with my eyes closed maybe while the song is playing, but I think instead what I'll do today while the song is playing is I'll go get my blue cord. I can string it all the way across the house. It's like a 30-foot cord and plug in, and maybe that will help with the mic in and out. We'll see what happens. So the song I'm going to play will probably sound familiar to you all. Not only is it what we call an oldie but a goodie, but it's also very closely related to a movie we had in our movie group earlier in the year. I think the name of the movie was Love Actually. Is that correct? Love Actually. And it had the Love Is All Around You Christmas version song. So I was going to play the regular version. So this is Love Is All Around by the Troggs. YouTube, so I stopped it before the little commercial at the end. But yeah, I enjoy that song very much. It could be seen as a special love song, but you know, whenever you listen to anything with the right mind, you hear it a little differently. So I like that song. So again, we are here now for the 7 steps to awakening, as I'm sure you all are aware. Oh, and I did not log in as an admin. So typically I give the link I don't know how many of y'all actually click on the link, though. Do I need to go out and come back in as admin so I can give you the link, or can we just pass on that for now? We're going to be looking at quote number 744. Yeah, pass on that. You know, it's funny because I think I may have mentioned this to y'all before. I don't think many people click on the link while I'm teaching, but there's a day later in the week when like 40 people click on it. So it's almost as if somebody out there somewhere is having a class or something and everybody's clicking on the link because it all happens on the same day. I don't know what that's about. But I guess if there is a class out there and you're hearing this, hi to you, whoever you are. Today we're going to be looking at quote 744 in the Seven Steps to Awakening. This is from step 3. And this is still from the Yoga Vasistha quotes. And let me read the quote to you. Whenever the ego sense arises, there the world manifests itself. The ego sense is the first cause of this world illusion. That kind of reminds me of, the Course is teaching that God did not create the world. Notice this quote does not say that God is the first cause of this world illusion. It says the ego sense is the first cause of this world illusion. So wherever the ego sense arises, there the world manifests itself. The ego sense is the first cause of this world illusion. And I think there's a couple of things that are happening for me just as I read the quote right now. First of all, this is referring to the world illusion. And we could probably enter into a philosophical discussion about what the world illusion is. What is the world illusion? What is the real world? Is there a real world? Or is there no world at all? Et cetera, et cetera. But I think you all probably know that I've kind of lost interest in philosophical discussions. And I'm much more interested in direct experience. And so when I look at the word illusion, the dictionary has a definition of the word illusion. The dictionary has a definition of the word illusion. And an illusion is something other than what it appears to be. Something other than what it appears to be. And I think if we look at the world and we listen to that word illusion and we contemplate that definition illusion, we may find that the world is an illusion in a number of different ways, not just one way. I mean, first of all, there is the experience that I talked briefly about in the Buddha at the Gas Pump interview, so y'all may have heard it recently. I had that experience where somehow, and I don't know how this happened, somehow I experienced what I call the Big Bang. Except when I experienced it, I did not experience it as something that happened, billions of years ago, once in the past. I experienced it as something that is happening over and over and over and over again now, thousands of times per second, so that the world appears constant, but it isn't. It is constantly, constantly, constantly being made. And so that, because that is something I directly experienced, that's something that I can accept as not philosophical, at least for me, right? I directly experience that. Also, from what I understand, there are certain scientists, maybe the quantum physicists, right, that teach that as well, that the world is coming and going and coming and going, and that it seems constant, but that it's not. So if the world appears to be a constant thing, and it is not a constant thing, then that would be an illusion, right? It appears to be something that it is not. Another way that the world is an illusion is the world appears to be outside of us. Now, this is if we perceive ourselves as the body, right? The body is in the world, and the majority of the world, except for the body itself, the majority of the world is outside. It's something we see on the outside. But any of us who have contemplated awareness very deeply, and I don't mean thinking about awareness, I mean observing awareness, watching awareness, awareness, watching awareness. Any of us that have contemplated awareness very deeply, I'm certain that I'm not the only one who has had the experience of myself as awareness and the world being in me, right? So it appears that I am a body in a world, right? That's the appearance. When really I am awareness and this world is in me. So that's another way that the world is an illusion, because it appears that the world is out there when actually the world is completely within. Let's see, another way that the world appears to be illusion is that the world kind of appears to be cause, you know, like right now we're having some snowy weather. Well, it's not snowing today. It snowed a few days ago, and we have snow on the ground in Pueblo. And, you know, maybe there are people who love the snow, and they're very happy. You know, they're running to the ski slopes. And then maybe there are people that really hate the snow, and they're very unhappy. But whether they think they're happy because, yay, it snowed fresh powder on the slopes, or they think they're unhappy because, oh my God, the roads are so slippery, and here in Pueblo West, where we have mostly dirt roads, very muddy, and all of that, they're seeing the world as cause. They're seeing the snow as making them happy, or the snow as making them unhappy. And that is not true. The world actually has absolutely nothing to do with our state of happiness or unhappiness. Our state of happiness or unhappiness has everything to do with the thoughts that we are choosing to believe. You know, if I choose to believe, yay, I love skiing, yay, I love the slopes, then I'm going to be happy. If I choose to believe, oh my God, I hate the mud, oh my God, I hate the cold, then I'm going to be unhappy. But it has nothing to do with the world. It has everything to do with the perception I am choosing to believe. So that's another way in which the world is an illusion, right? It appears to be the cause, but it isn't. It isn't the cause. And a fourth way that the world is an illusion is that the world is actually caused by our believing of thinking. You know, the world that is out, the world that appears to be out there, the world that is that we are experiencing is a direct reflection of the believing that is happening on both the micro and the macro level. And so that's a fourth way that the world appears to be an illusion. So, you know, it's quite interesting then that this particular quote talks about this world illusion, and it says the ego sense is the first cause of this world illusion. And so what that means is the belief in I, the person, and I, the body, must be in place in order for me to experience this apparently constant world outside of me that has the power to make me happy or unhappy, make me safe or unsafe. And of course, my thinking, I think, if the ego sense is in place, my thinking has nothing to do with the world, right? Like there's, you know, I can think whatever I want. It has nothing to do with the world. The world is an independent entity. So the ego sense must be in place in order to perceive all of that as true. So again, quote 744 says, wherever the ego sense arises, there the world manifests itself. The ego sense is the first cause of this world illusion. So I'm going to go to my journal and read what I wrote in my journal on July 29th, 2013, starting with number 744A. Looking out includes looking at the I thought as me. Looking out at I and my relationship to the world generates a hardening of self and world. One who has become sensitive can feel this hardening when it takes place. Sensitivity is the gift of grace. It bids, turn away from out, turn within. One who values gentleness and ease will heed the bidding of grace, even if it seems to take effort to abandon the habits of self. Peace lies with grace. Resisting grace is the path of suffering. So that's a pretty long journal entry. It seems like I've been experiencing shorter journal entries lately. But this one begins with looking out includes looking at the I thought as me. I know that when I first began the spiritual path, well, first of all, I think when I first began the spiritual path, I didn't even have any thought at all about looking out and looking within. Like, those ideas did not exist for me. And so I learned about looking out, and I learned about looking within, and I learned the difference, and I learned how to keep my awareness focused within instead of being focused out. And the way that I learned this was primarily through contemplation, such as contemplating the seven steps, but also, of course, through being the scribe for NTI and Inner Ramana and all of that. And what I learned that I did not know when I started the spiritual path, and I'm assuming that probably most of you all did not know this either, what I learned was that my thoughts are a part of the projection. My thoughts are outside. You know, if the world is outside, the thoughts are outside too. Right? And of course, we already talked about how it's actually all within awareness. But I think that in my case, before I saw it as all within, first I was noticing that there were things that I had thought were within, such as thinking. I thought, because, you know, I defined myself as the body, right? So the skin was the border. So if it happened within the skin, I thought it was within. And if it happened on the outside of the skin, I thought it was without or outside. And so the thinking originally I would have thought was within. And I possessed it. It's mine because it's within the skin, right? It's on the inward direction. But what I learned through contemplation and through watching, through being aware, was that the thoughts were actually outside. They were a part of the projection of the world. They were not me. And so that's what this first line of the journal entry is saying. Looking out includes looking at the I thought as me. And in fact, as I became more and more aware, right, more and more sensitive, as this particular journal entry uses the word, I also began to notice that my attention was not as engaged with the world as I would have thought. You know, I would have thought, if you had asked me before I started the spiritual path, how much of my attention was focused on the world, I'm sure I would have said all of it. You know, all of my attention is focused on the world, and thought that was very smart. You know, very smart to be, you know, paying attention to the world like that. But what I learned as I paid closer and closer attention to what was actually happening is that my attention was not on the world that much. My attention was on my thinking. My attention was on my thoughts about the world. My attention was on my interpretations, right? My attention was on that me, that I thought. That's where all of the attention really was. So again, what this first line of the journal entry is saying is looking out includes looking at the I thought as me. And again, that is the primary interest of the ego. Even the world itself is secondary. This me, the character in the world, is of primary interest. Looking out at I and my relationship to the world generates a hardening of self and world. So, first of all, when it talks about a hardening of self and world, it means a hardening of the belief that there's a me and there's a world, right? Looking out at I and my relationship to the world generates a hardening of the self and the world. So whether I am someone who loves the snow, that's me. I love the snow. I can't wait till it snows. I grab my skis and I run up to Monarch, right? Or whether I'm me, I hate the snow. It just gets so muddy around here and, you know, the mud sticks to my car and gets all in my garage and, you know, whatever. Or somewhere in between. It doesn't really matter which me I am. When I look out at the world and I interpret the world in a particular way or interpret events in a particular way and I believe those thoughts, I think, yes, that is me. I am the one who loves snow or I am the one who does not love snow. What I am doing is increasing the belief that there's a me in a world. And I know this makes sense to you all because I'm sure that you all have observed this too. Right? There's a me and there's a world. So again, looking out includes looking at the I thought as me. Looking out at I and my relationship to the world generates a hardening of self and world. One who has become sensitive can feel this hardening when it takes place. And so this is what happens when we are earnest on the spiritual path, sincere on the spiritual path, when awakening is really what's most important to us, is there's some kind of a sensitivity that arises, which comes from grace, which is actually the next line in the journal entry. Or we could say, if we don't want to use the word grace, like I don't know if Michael Langford would be crazy about the word grace. You know, he and I had an interesting discussion about grace when I was out at his place. What Michael might say, and I think actually it's the same thing, what Michael would say is it comes from our willingness. It comes from our willingness or he wouldn't use the word willingness. He would use the word, our intense desire for liberation or our intense desire for Mananasa. But that intense desire that then creates this sensitivity, right? This extra sensitivity, I might call that grace. You know, he might be right that it came from the intense desire, but it still feels like something that happened without the me making it happen, right? The me did not make a conscious decision to become more sensitive. The sensitivity arose. And the good news about this sensitivity, first of all, if you want to say it has bad news, and this is, I wouldn't actually define it this way, but the bad news would be that there is more pain. The sensitivity creates more pain. But the good news about that pain, the good news about that sensitivity is this helps us to stick to the decision that Jay asked us to make this morning, that we would not tolerate, the ego within ourselves anymore. When we become more sensitive, when this little pain begins to arise every time that we are hardening the sense of self and world through identifying with thinking, when that pain begins to arise, that pain reminds us that that is not a choice we want to make. And again, the pain comes about from believing, yes, I am the one who likes snow or I am the one who hates snow, right? The pain comes from that. So when the pain arises, what we learn to do is we learn to just kind of soften around the believing so that the believing somehow becomes loose and then the thoughts just kind of float away into nothing, as Carla said this morning, right? So we learn to soften. So, you know, maybe I hear myself talking about how I hate the snow, right? And then I notice that. I notice the pain, you know, the constriction that's happening within. Maybe there's a tightening somewhere, and I notice that. And so I relax, and I soften, and I release. I release the belief that I just latched onto. And so it's really wonderful that we have this increased sensitivity, because it is teaching us to make, you could say, different decisions. And we start releasing the identity that is the cause of the belief, me and world. Right? We start releasing it. So looking out includes looking at the I thought as me. Looking out at I and my relationship to the world generates a hardening of self and world. One who has become sensitive can feel this hardening when it takes place. Sensitivity is the gift of grace. It bids turn away from out, turn within. And again, it's when we turn within that we will feel that prompt to soften, to release, to rest, accept, and trust, right? Let go of this belief, this identification. One who values gentleness and ease will heed the bidding of grace, even if it seems to take effort to abandon the habits of self. And that's interesting, because we also heard Jay talk this morning about how there can seem to be struggle on the spiritual path, struggle in embracing new habits and letting go of old. And if you all were at the Michael Langford study group last Wednesday night, you also heard Nisargadatta use that word struggle, which might be why Jay was using the same word, right? Struggle. And this is saying, again, if we value gentleness and ease, if we value gentleness and ease, then we are going to soften and release this identity, this identification that we've just made about who we are. But at the same time, even though we're calling that gentleness and ease and softening, it may, at times, take effort. For example, if I identify myself as a mother, and let's be the mother of an adult child, because being the mother of an adult child is different than being the mother of like an infant or a six-year-old, right? You know, as a mother of an infant or a six-year-old, you know, you do need to take care of your child in certain ways. Like, you know, they do have to hold my hand in the parking lot because they might get squished by a car. That's a little song I used to sing to Jasmine. Hold my hand in the parking lot. Hold my hand in the parking lot. Hold my hand in the parking lot. Because if you don't, you might get squished by a car. Right? That's necessary for a young child. So, you know, being the parent of a young child is different than being the parent of an adult child. Once you have an adult child, they have the right to make their own decisions. And it's very possible, many parents experience this, that an adult child may make a decision that the parent is not so fond of. Right? The parent is not so fond of. And so at this point, the identification that I am the parent, and it is my job to keep her safe or to help her make decisions that are going to make her happy or whatever. This identification can be very, very strong if we feel that our child is making a mistake. And it can take great effort, great struggle to soften and release that identification. You know, because there's just such a strong belief there that it's my job to keep her safe. Of course, it was when she was six, but now that she's 26, it isn't. But sometimes the identification lingers, right? The identification lasts longer than the job. So there are times when it takes great, great, great effort to let go of these ideas that I have identified with. In fact, the ego will tell us in one way or another that this is a life or death matter. It will tell me I am unloving, I am not taking care of my child, she's going to hurt herself in some way or get hurt in some way, and it's going to be all my fault and blah, 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 right? But that does not change the fact that this I and my relationship to the world, in this case, the daughter is in the world, so my relationship to the world, this I and this my relationship to the world and my relationship to my daughter and my job as her caretaker, right? All of these thoughts are hardening the self-identity, and they are hardening the idea of me and world, which means they are the opposite of what we say that we are here for, which is the letting go of ego. It's actually the increasing of ego, the hardening of ego, the making ego seem more real, more true, more necessary even. More necessary. So one thing we want to do is we want to start to give willingness to be sensitive, to notice the contraction, notice the pain of identification with ideas that increase the idea of me, of who I am. And then the next thing we want to do is we want to be willing, whenever our sensitivity, which is grace or, you know, the gift of our intense desire for liberation, whichever, or both, because maybe they're the same, right? But when we notice the contraction, the constriction, when we notice that we are suffering, we are worrying, we are fearful, we are getting upset at our stomach, whatever, you know, we notice all of this, we want to give the willingness to soften. We want to give the willingness to release. We want to give the willingness to rest, accept, and trust. We want to breathe. Exhaling especially seems really important to me during those times. It's like I'm exhaling out the identification. And just keep doing that until the thoughts pass on into nothing, as Carla said this morning. Right? This is how we move towards awakening to the true self. And it does take effort. And anyone who says that awakening takes no effort at all is probably not moving toward awakening right now, right? They aren't. They're playing a game. They're playing a spiritual game. So looking out includes looking at the I thought as me, looking out at I and my relationship to the world generates a hardening of self and world. One who has become sensitive can feel this hardening when it takes place. Sensitivity is the gift of grace. It bids, turn away from out, turn within. One who values gentleness and ease will heed the bidding of grace, even if it seems to take effort to abandon the habits of self. Peace lies with grace. Resisting grace is the path of suffering. And again, it's really interesting. It says one who values gentleness and ease. And again, you know, in the short term, you know, which could be a 5-year period or a 10-year period or a 15-year period or a 20-year period or a 1-year period, right? But in the short term, when we're going through the practice of letting go of the identifications, it might not seem like gentleness and ease. It might even seem like hell. But if we value gentleness and ease, we will continue to go within, continue to listen to within as within tells us to rest, accept, and trust, breathe, release, allow, accept, all of that stuff that we get from within. And we will move through this purification period where these identifications are loosened and released. And then we live a natural life of gentleness and ease. So that's number 744A in my journal, and there is also a 744B. Let me go back and read the quote again that we are looking at. The quote is, "Whenever the ego sense arises, there the world manifests itself. The ego sense is the first cause of this world illusion." By the way, I just had a thought. Can you imagine if I told Jasmine to hold my hand in the parking lot now? You know, kids also, they do know. When she was young and I said, "Hold my hand in the parking lot," she got it. She held my hand because she actually knew then that it was my job to be her caretaker. But if I tried to get her to hold my hand now, the look I would get from her would be like, you know, "Oh my God," you know, because she knows it's not my job to be her caretaker anymore. Right? She knows that because this is naturally built in. So if I was trying to be her caretaker now, that would merely be because I had identified with the role of mother. Yeah, I'm not a kid anymore, along with a dirty look, right? The role of mother is a role. And when we are in that role, you know, it's good to take that role, you know, somewhat seriously. You know, you don't just let your kid run around where they might get hit by a car, right? You hold their hand. But we don't want to identify with the role because the role will end. And when the role ends, then it's ended. And if we're still identified, it's only going to cause us suffering and possibly even our children and their spouses. This is where the story of the mother-in-law, right? Oh no, the mother-in-law. This is someone who hasn't let go of their role as parents. All right, so again, the quote that we're looking at, one more time, "Wherever the ego sense arises, there the world manifests itself. The ego sense is the first cause of this world illusion." And let's look at 744B in the journal. "Thoughts about I are the first step into the hardening of illusion. Therefore, questioning I and looking at it with the light of awareness is a precious stance that maintains one steadfast in the decision not to travel away from the heart." So again, as we've talked about, I is the first cause of the world illusion, right? I is the first cause of the world illusion. So let's imagine, let's imagine that Jasmine is making a decision that the mother does not approve of. The mother being thinking, of course. Let's see, what could that be? Let's say that I have become aware of the fact that Jasmine is drinking and driving at school. Right, I have become aware of the fact that Jasmine is drinking and driving at school. Now, I would say it's pretty natural, even though Jasmine is, you know, an adult, it would be pretty natural for me to, maybe say, "Hey, I've heard you're drinking and driving. You know, that's not a good idea. You know, you could get killed. You could kill someone else. This is really something you need to look at." By the way, listen to these words. "This is really something you need to look at. You need to think about how you would feel if you had to live with the consequences of, you know, killing someone else because you're drinking and driving." But, you know, after I've had this very serious discussion with her, the truth is, whether I like it or not, this is her decision. And so once I've had this very serious discussion with her, you know, this is something that I'm probably going to have to let go of because I have no control. Right? I can't drive up to school and move in with her and chain her to me and have her hold my hand all the time and live the way I want her to live. So what happens if I find myself sitting back at home worrying. What happens? What do I do? I'm worried all the time. Oh no, here comes another Friday night. What if she's drinking and driving again, you know? What do I do with that? I start questioning. I don't question whether drinking and driving is a good idea or a bad idea. That's the wrong type of questioning. I'm only going to prove myself right there. I question, where is my suffering coming from? I look very carefully, where is my suffering coming from? My suffering is coming from the stories I am telling myself about her drinking and driving. My suffering is coming by the stories, you know, how would I feel if she is killed? How would I get by without her? How would I feel if I have to see her suffer because she knows she was responsible for killing somebody else? How would I feel if I have to watch her suffer, right? If I start looking, what I'm really going to find is what Kathy has already written on the board. It's really all about me. This is me and my relationship to the world. God, it's not even about my daughter. It's about me and my relationship to the world. When I start seeing that, I start really looking at that me. What is that me? What is that me that has a relationship to the world? And just look. And if you really, really look, just keep watching. It seems like I remember once Ramana Maharshi saying something about grabbing the ego by the tail and not letting go. I'm not sure if I did or if that's just the way, you know, I imagined it as he was speaking, but it seems like I remember him, grab the ego by the tail and don't let it go, which means just keep looking at that me. What is that me? Who is that me that is frightened for her to die or for her to suffer? Who is that me? And if I keep looking and keep looking, what I'm going to see is that me is thinking, that me is thought. And as soon as I see in a very genuine way that is thinking, that is thought, I can then ask, what am I? And shift my attention to awareness. Notice I am not the thinking. The thinking, remember, is on the outside. It's a part of the projection of the world. What am I? And if I start really, really, really looking at the true me, what I am, I'm going to find nothing but peace. Just this constant, unending peace. And it's not that I am at peace. That peace is what I am. And then if I just keep my attention with the peace that I am, keep watching that awareness, awareness watching awareness, this is going to loosen the identification of me and the world. This awareness watching awareness is going to move me in the direction of true awakening. Awakening to the true self. And again, this is a time when making this choice may take some effort. Because, you know, if I'm identified as the mother and I think I need my daughter's happiness, health and happiness for me to be happy, it's going to take great willingness to sit down and do this questioning when the entire time I'm doing this questioning, my ego is screaming, I need to jump in the car and drive up to Fort Collins and handcuff my daughter to me, right? It's going to take great willingness. It's going to take an effort. It's going to take a struggle. But that's what this spiritual path is really all about, folks. It's not about practicing only when it's convenient to the me. It's about practicing in order to see that I am not the me. The me's fears are not my fears. The me's worries are not my worries. The me's apparent needs are not my apparent needs. None of that is true. And it seems like we really make great progress with this realization when we are willing to practice these spiritual practices when the going gets tough for the me, when the me is really scared, is what I mean by that. When the me is really scared and the me says, no, 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 we do not have time for that stupid self-inquiry crap. You know, we have to take control here. This is disaster. This is real. You know, that's what it's saying. This is real. That spiritual stuff is okay, you know, when, you know, nothing major is going on. It's okay for you to play that spiritual game if you want to. But this is real, right? That's the best time to practice. That's the best time to practice. That's where we make the greatest stride. So again, 744B says, thoughts about I are the first step into the hardening of illusion. Therefore, questioning I and looking at it with the light of awareness is a precious stance that maintains one steadfast in the decision not to travel away from the heart. I love the way the journal calls it a stance. It's a stance. It's a position. I have decided to take a position that ends all positions. Right? I love, it's always one of my favorite things that the Course says, that it says the Holy Spirit uses everything the ego made. And, you know, here we are letting go of positions, right? The ego made positions. That's my position on this issue. Yet with the Holy Spirit, or inner wisdom does, is it gives us a position that we can take that undoes all other positions. Right? It's a stance we can take, a position we can take that undoes all other positions. The position of inquiry, observing, awareness, watching awareness, and when necessary, rest, accept, and trust. Right? These positions help undo those other positions, the positions that cause us to believe in self and world. And that's the end of 744. So let me have a peek at 745. Let's see, we only have 10 minutes left, but you know what? It doesn't really matter. All that matters is that intuitively I'm feeling to go on to 745, so that's what we're going to do. So here's 745. If one is able to remove the ego sense by means of one's awakened intelligence, he cleanses from his consciousness the impurity known as the world appearance. If one is able to remove the ego sense by means of one's awakened intelligence, he cleanses from his consciousness the impurity known as the world appearance. I love that this quote refers to your awakened intelligence. As you all probably know, if you know me at all, you know, I've kind of lost interest in this idea of I'm awake, I'm not awake, right? I mean, I either am or not. Like there's some kind of this line that you cross. And on one side of the line, you're the unawake. And on the other side of the line, you are now awake. And I don't know, it even sounds like a separation to me. And I also, as I've mentioned many times before, I think people try to pretend that they're awake because there's this thought that they're not aware of. It's the I am bad thought. And the I am bad thought is basically saying, you know, if you're not awake, you're bad. And they don't want to be bad, so they pretend to be awake. And that allows them to deny everything, you know, because they don't have to be a student anymore, blah, blah, blah. So I'm not crazy about this awake, not awake thing. But, you know, when we talk about this awake, not awake thing, you know, one of the things that the teachers will say, and this I think encourages sometimes the ego takes this and it encourages the false identification with I'm awake. But one thing that teachers will say is that everybody is awake. Well, I love the way this particular quote words it. It says that you have awakened intelligence. If one is able to remove the ego sense by means of one's awakened intelligence. The way I like to say that is awakeness is in you. Awakeness is present with you now. Right? Awakeness is here. That awakeness, that awakened intelligence that's being referred to by the Yoga Vasistha, that's what A Course in Miracles calls the Holy Spirit. And I like awakened intelligence even better because, you know, some people get the idea, although I know Kate has said this idea was helpful to her and I appreciate it. I think it was probably helpful to me for a time too. But some people get this idea that the Holy Spirit is an other, right? It's an other. And some people further get this idea that because I am bad, I am not good enough to get in touch with this other. Therefore, I am obstructed from that awakened intelligence. And that's not true. Your awakened intelligence is absolutely natural. It's always been there. It's untouched. It's never fallen asleep. And it's completely available in every moment of every day. This is why A Course in Miracles Lesson 49 says, God's voice speaks to me all through the day. So, in a way, if we say I'm awake or if we say I'm not awake, either way, we're not really speaking a whole truth anyway because perfect awakeness is there. But it might not be all that's there. You know, it's like we might not have removed everything else that isn't that awakened intelligence. And so it is kind of like we're both awake and not awake at the same time. You know, and to different degrees. Depending on the degree to which we have removed the non-awakeness. I think Jesus says something also in the beginning of the course about how, and again, I don't remember these words well at all, but the general idea is something like the only difference between him and the reader of the course, the student of the course, is that he is only love now, right? He has removed all of the obstacles to love's presence. And the reader of the course, the student of the course, is the same love that Jesus is, but not only love. The other things that have been added on are still there. So again, what I love about this quote, one thing I love about this quote, is that it refers to our awakened intelligence. That perfect awakeness is here, right now, in each and every one of us. And not just the people on the spiritual path, on everyone. Now, this awakened intelligence, I will tell you, can be denied. It can be repressed. It can be pushed way, way, way down so that we barely hear it or notice it at all. You know, I was looking at these four I want to call them children, but they were all legally adults. These four children who kidnapped and tortured a special needs kid, and they live streamed the whole thing on Facebook. Do you guys hear about that in the news? And one of the things they put on the news was the faces of these four kids. They've been, of course, arrested, and they're in jail without the possibility of bail. And if you look in the eyes of these kids, if you look in their eyes, you can't see the glimmer of awakened intelligence. It is so deeply repressed by all of the conditioning, by all of the believing, by all of the fear, by all of the hatred. Their eyes look dull. D-U-L-L, dull. Almost dead. But that awakened intelligence is still there. That absolutely perfect, as awakened as any awakened person you've ever known. It's still there. In that way, everyone is awake. Right? But that's not all that's there. And in fact, again, in those four individuals, it seems to be so far buried. It would have to be, in order to do what they did, it would have to be so far buried underneath and repressed and denied. But it's there. And it's even possible that it spoke to each of them at some point during this incident and they repressed it again. Right? They repressed it again. So, again, the quote, and apparently we're going to look at the quote next week because now we are moving up on the end of the hour. But the quote says, if one is able to remove the ego sense by means of one's awakened intelligence. So all of that extra that's on top, and again, we may have varying degrees of extra stuff. You know, non-truth, beliefs, identification, conditioning. You know, like maybe those four kids have a lot more piled on than some of us do right now. You know, we've removed more, right? So maybe our awakened intelligence is a little more revealed than theirs. But it's the same awakened intelligence. And if that is not all that is there, if that awakened intelligence is not all that is there, then we still need to be doing the work of seeing what other identifications are there, seeing what other attachments are there, seeing what fears are there, and practicing the softening, the releasing, the letting go, the self-inquiry, the awareness, watching awareness. We still need to be doing all of that. We still need to be the student. And there's nothing the ego would like more than for us to declare ourselves awake and then stop being the student. Because if we stop being the student, then the ego is still primary. And the awakened intelligence is secondary. But if we keep being the student, the ego moves into the secondary position, the awakened intelligence moves into the primary position, and then the awakened intelligence can guide us through the undoing, undoing, undoing until the ego is no more. And that is that's the end of the hour. I see the question, can't I just turn the ego off? I would say if you can, do it. If you can just turn it off, do it. I haven't found it to be quite so simple as that. All right, y'all. Thank you very much. It's been wonderful talking to you, and I'm looking forward to the next couple of hours. So I'll be hanging out with you. Bye.